Welcome to the Table Podcast, where we discuss issues of God and culture. Brought to you by Dallas Theological Seminary.
Welcome to the Table Podcast, where we discuss issues of God and culture. My name is Kimberly Cook, and I'm the Assistant Director here at the Hendrick Center. And today we're going to be discussing ministering in an anxious world. And we are joined by Ronnie Martin, who is the lead pastor at Substance Church and the co-host of the Art of Pastoring podcast. Ronnie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
So first, I think just to kind of get started, so we're going to be talking about ministry and ministering and being a pastor and all of the things in the midst of an anxious world. And for anybody listening or watching that is surprised that we might be talking about an anxious world, they must have been like some of the people who were on the island, like, like by themselves for the last 3 years. So I think we all know about the anxious world. But first, let's get to know you a little bit, Ronnie. Let's first hear about, like, how did you get involved in ministry and pastory, like the pastoral ministry and ministry in general? How did you end up kind of in this space?
Yeah, gosh, that's always an interesting question. Like a lot of guys, you know, a lot of men and women, the path was very windy, and it's almost hard to make sense of it now because God has this really unique way of, you know, not using a template to get people, you know, into that call to ministry. So for me, it was a long time ago at this point that I kind of came in from the music side of it, really? The worship side of it, being involved a little more on the creative end of it in that sense, before I just slowly, the Lord, you know, grew me in that ministry and then eventually grew me out of that ministry and gave me a desire for church planting and preaching and pastoring. And so it's been a couple of decades now process. And so currently, are we still in the call here?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
I can still hear you. You're fine.
I had a frozen window. Yeah, so what I'm doing right now is I'm the pastor of Substance Church in Ashland, Ohio, which is right in between Cleveland and Columbus. And planted that church almost a decade ago. Hmm. And we're also working with a church planting network called Harbor Network. So I do kind of pastoral care, leader renewal ministry, pastoring other pastors kind of ministry with Harbor. And I'm doing a lot in terms of ministering to other pastors, ministering to a local congregation, and all the stuff that contains in between. So, yeah.
So how did you make that step from what was it that you felt or, you know, what happened in the midst of your music ministry that made you realize, you know, I think the Lord is calling me to step into more congregational leadership?
You know, part of it is that I was not really I was a lousy worship leader.
Well, at least you're humble. That's a good thing too.
Yeah, I had come up through the music industry doing a lot of my own music, and I think when I got into worship ministry, it's very different, and I always struggled with it. I was never very good at it. But I was always, you know, I always had a heart for the word. I always had a heart for communication. And the parts I enjoyed the most in worship ministry were those moments in between the songs when you communicate, you know, with the congregation a little bit more. And so it really started off as simple as that, just realizing I don't think this is going to be long term for me. There's so many more gifted women and men that can do this than me. And at some point, I just got a desire for preaching, and then got opportunities to start doing that. And before I knew it, it just seemed like the most obvious next step.
Hmm. So how did you end up pastoring pastors? So you went from being a worship pastor to a lead pastor and, you know, a teaching pastor, and then you ended up working even further with pastoring pastors. And how did you end up doing that?
Yeah, I started my church planting journey a little bit older than a lot of guys. So I was in my early 40s when that began, and I got connected with a church planting network, like I said, called Harbor, very early on when we were planting. And I think it was just a case of having had ministry experience, being older, you know, a good decade or so older than a lot of the younger people that were coming in planting, and then just being utilized in that, you know, from just a ministry, you know, kind of functionality standpoint. Hey, these guys could use somebody to sit down and talk with them and help them through, you know, some all the various details that goes into church planting. And I think it just happened and grew organically from that. And it really became a passion of mine too. I love sitting down with younger leaders and just kind of hearing where they're at and being able to listen, being able to maybe offer just, you know, I don't know, a kernel of wisdom, which is about the extent of what I have, and see if it helps, see if it benefits them. And so the Lord has given me some opportunities to do that. And it's been really fun.
So in the last, you know, I joked earlier about living on an island in the last 3 years, but I mean, I think we may have said before 2019, I think we all may have said, oh yeah, you know, like we live in a stressful world or we live in an anxious world. And then, you know, the tsunami hit and we all really realized what it is to at least another step in living in an anxious world. So I'm assuming in the midst of your ministry with pastoring pastors, you've had to like start to really think about how to help, and I mean you yourself, but also help others, like think about ministering in the midst of such an anxious culture and an anxious environment, anxious congregations. So like, tell me a little bit about what your journey has been in that in the last 3 years or so. You know, what have you been thinking through? What have you seen? You know, just walk me through what that's looked like, especially with regard to like pastoring the pastors in the midst of it.
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting the way you even frame that, because if you go back a few years, if you go back pre-COVID, you know, pastors have always struggled with anxiety, and it comes with the job, and I think it's one of the high components of the job for sure. But I would say the majority of the conversations 3 years ago would have been, you know, having conversations with pastors about how to minister to people in their congregations that are struggling with anxiety. The big shift now is, hey, I don't need you to help me with the guy, you know, five rows back, you know, three seats in, you know, I don't need help ministering to him for his anxiety. I'm the one that is struggling so bad right now. How do I deal with this level of anxiety? Because it's hit a ceiling, it's at a fever pitch. And the conversations that, you know, really surfaced, I think, in the last 3 years for many pastors, and I think the stats prove this out, is, do I even want to continue doing this? The pressure and the stress and the anxiety is so high right now. It's nothing that I anticipated, because, of course, nobody anticipated a global pandemic.
Yeah.
And then how to go about doing our jobs, you know, with needing to have all kinds of answers for issues and topics and things that we've never given more than 21 seconds of thought to, if that. And I think that's been the major shift, is just pastors really struggling and just losing their foot in that whole arena. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's dig a little bit into that anxious world that we're talking about. I think perhaps first, more than anything, it would be helpful. You know, we've already thrown the word around quite a bit. When we are talking, this is the classic, like, academic. If we're using the word anxiety, what exactly are we saying? But I think it is relevant, because it's a really popular word, especially in our mindfulness culture. And, you know, everybody, you know, talks about their anxiety and all of that. But what are we meaning, you and I, when we use the word anxiety?
Yeah, gosh, that's a great question. The way that I process the word and the way that I see it played out in real time, it seems to be when you are faced with circumstances of which you have no control over, and they seem all encompassing, and they actually now are shaping, you know, both the inner culture and the outer culture of your day-to-day life. And there's probably way better ways to define that. But talking about it from a pastoral standpoint, I think what you've seen happen in the last 3 years is, from an intellectual standpoint or from a biblical standpoint, we believe that control is illusory. We know that we really, at the end of the day, don't have a lot. We have some self-control over the way that we respond and react to things. But control in terms of sovereignty of God-level control and how the world is working itself out, we know we don't have any control over that. And I think what the last 3 years have done has pulled the rug out from under us about the things that we would say we didn't have control over, but it presented itself as truly not having control over those things. And by things, we probably more specifically mean people, and people saying things and doing things and behaving in particular ways that really adversely have affected our lives and our vocations. And the fact that it happened at a rate and a speed that we had no idea was going to come to that particular rate and speed, I think it made it all the more difficult to even try to understand what was going on. And so that leads to, you know, heart rates that are through the roof. It leads to lack of sleep. It leads to all these physical realities and emotional realities that just completely affect you from a holistic standpoint, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, I mean, just going along with what you're saying, I think, like, not only it affected, you know, like the relationships and the people, you know, like the assumptions we thought we had about that, but even, you know, whether or not we actually would have ever admitted feeling like we had control over, you know, disease and, you know, health and all of that, I think, I mean, certainly, given all of the reactions to everything that has happened, you know, I think we thought we could control that too, you know, through science and all of that. And obviously we, you know, have breakthroughs and all of that in lots of areas. But I think that's another place where we assumed that we had control. And then lo and behold, you know, that rug is ripped out from under you too. And that leaves you reeling. You know, when a lot of these things that you felt like were solid ground that you were standing on, you realize, you know, no, they were just, you know, inflatable mattresses on a pool, and you were really balanced.
Yeah, really, that's a great way to put it. That's really good. Yeah. And I think it was even, I mean, to your point, it was so interesting. We all remember this, you know, whatever, you know, mid-March, March 15th, when, you know, around the nation, around the world, it's like, okay, this is the thing. And and you remember this when everybody said, just give it a couple of weeks. Yeah. Everything's going to be back to normal. And so even the way you're describing that, which is to say, we got this, we can handle this, we can find a way, and it's not going to be long, and it's not going to be inconvenient. It'll maybe be inconvenient in the moment, but there are people, you know, it's the big they word, they're going to find a solution, and we can depend on that, and we can trust them, and that, of course, all, you know, went
south.
And
we realized there was no they. It was just a bunch of other broken people, and that's okay, you know, but it's just a bunch of people doing the absolute best that they could and working as hard as they could, but lo and behold, you know, we're just human, and we found out what that really means, you know, and yeah. So let's to make this even more depressing and horrible, before we get into how to minister in the midst of it. So like, let's talk a little bit about what does an anxious world look like? So and the reason I think that that's a helpful question to talk about here is, I think sometimes, you know, we're really quick to jump to the individual, you know, and I even joked with the mindfulness culture, we're quick to jump to our own anxiety and, you know, recognizing that. But I think sometimes we lose sight of the fact that our culture, our world right now is in the same place that we individuals are, you know, and that there are certain symptoms that we see that if you really trace them down, it comes, you know, it's founded in this underlying anxiety. So what would you say are some of those symptoms? Are they the same symptoms of a person who has anxiety? Or, you know, like, what are we seeing on a more corporate scale that we can look at and say, you know what, it looks like, you know, we're fighting or whatever, but really it's just anxiety underlying this. What are your thoughts in that area?
Yeah, that is such a re that's a really good that's a really good question. I think, I think when we think about an anxious world, again, I'm probably going to use the word control a lot, but I think it's a world that is fighting for a control that it's not meant to have, because that is not the way God intended the world to operate, and that's not the way He intended His creatures to know Him and to be known by Him. And so I think an anxious world is a world that is fighting for something that it will never gain any grip around, and then responding to that, and more than responding to that, really reacting to that in ways that promote self-interest over love of neighbor. And again, that's so when we think of the Christian ethic in an anxiety-ridden world, the Christian ethic would be, well, how can I lay down my life? How can I help you? How can I love you the way that Christ has loved me? How can I look to the good and the benefit of you through something that is very difficult? And I think you see pockets of that, obviously, in the world and how they respond and how they react, for sure. We don't want to paint it, too far one way. But I think at the end of the day, it's an anxious world. The result of that, or the symptoms of that, is going to be an increasing level of self-interest that puts other people at risk so that you can retain the level of control that you feel like you're losing.
Fascinating. Yeah, I was in a conversation the other day with someone, and they said, what do you think are, two or three of the major misunderstanding, like theological misunderstandings in the church, So nothing small with regard to the question. But one of my answer, like the first two, were that I think we have a misunderstanding of fear and anger, and that fear and anger are driving so many things right now. And to a degree, some of us in the church think that fear and anger of certain things is legitimate. But like you said, like there is a strong line, theme in scripture of, I mean, obviously there are certain circumstances where anger is okay, but because God can also, God all is also angry, but there is a strong line and theme of, like, this is not about me, and this is not about us, and it is not necessarily about our best interest. And the reason we know that is because Jesus, abandoned, not abandoned, oh goodness. Yeah. Jesus, he humbled himself and he came down, and he was willing to not be in the most comfortable situation, and to not be, getting the things that he deserved. And that is who we are called to follow. And the fact that we, think that we should have control and we should have comfort and all of those things, we're missing out on it. One other quick question about anxious world. So there have been anxious times in the past. So, like World War II, World War I, the Spanish flu, we can point to other times. What do you think, if anything, I really don't know, what do you think is different now about the anxiety that we're facing on a corporate global scale? Or is there anything different?
Well, yeah, I think, there's probably things that are similar because, when you get down to some foundational levels of things, things can't be different because we're humans, and that is never. I do think what would be different now is, and this is maybe the easiest and simplest way to think about it, is that the way information is exchanged now. It just, well, you didn't see that 100 years ago. I mean, you didn't see that 25 years ago, practically. And so I think the level of information sharing and I think the access to it, and I think the 24-hour nature of it, I think it doesn't allow people to settle on a particular truth that is agreed upon by the majority anymore. And it allows you to find a particular truth, whether it's true or not, that suits your level of comfort, your level of belief, your level of philosophy in life. And you can run with that, whether it's true or not, or whether it has components of truth. But then what that does is it creates dissonance now, because if anybody even has a slightly different, you know, take or different version of it, we're not very good at finding common ground, I think. And I think there's an overload of information now that makes it very difficult to say, hey, you know what? I think we're thinking more alike on this than we are, you know, having differences. But we're not operating now in mediums in which that is an easy thing to do in the moment. You know, Twitter's not a great place to have great discussions.
To sit down in.
Yeah, totally. And so I would say that to me is that to me it seems to be the I mean, on a very basic level, that seems to be a pretty big factor.
Yeah, I would agree. I feel like just the pure amount of information too, you know, not only the ways in which it's distributed, you know, through social media and that kind of thing, but just the overwhelming amount I can find out about something tragic or unjust that happened in some backwoods town in Australia in 2 seconds, you know. Yeah. And so it's almost like it allows our feelings and our anxieties to reach this certain fever pitch, and then it never lets up, like, because all of these things are constantly available and put before us. And so we can never, you know, I mean, back in the old days, you know, they'd have newsreels or something. So you might see it on a Friday night, but then you wouldn't know very much beyond, you know, a couple newspaper articles until whenever the next newsreel came out, you know.
Yeah.
And so you were able to still kind of go back to your normal life. But here it's just always before us. And so I think there is a level of anxiety present, like perpetually present, in a way that perhaps it wasn't, you know. I wasn't there in 1940, so I'm not 100% sure, but it doesn't seem like it.
Yeah, and I think that brings, you know, especially, so I think the burden then for the church then becomes wisdom. It becomes, it becomes issue of wisdom. So, you know, when you are somebody who has the Spirit of Christ in them, and you're going into a situation of where that is not present, and you don't want to be an anxious presence to add to all the other anxious presence that's there, I think what we've been given in Scripture is this opportunity to display wisdom. And out of wisdom comes the very things that can cut a knife through an anxious presence, which is patience and kindness and self-control. And so I think the burden on the church to me in this day, when we talk about an anxious world, is, but are we living out the wisdom that we have because we have the Spirit living inside of us? And obviously, and unfortunately, we're not seeing that a lot. You know, we're seeing the church react in the way that the world reacts. And now that's creating its own culture, right, at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's almost like, I don't want to imply in any way that anybody having problems with anxiety, because I don't know how you couldn't in the midst of our current situations.
Right.
I think it's also a matter of faith. I love what you're saying with wisdom. I agree with that wholeheartedly. And I think, you know, faith and wisdom go hand in hand. And I think it's a matter of true faith that, like, no, I really recognize that I am not in charge. You know, we were talking about control earlier. I am not the one in control. And I refuse to try to be in control. I refuse to play these games to try to be the voice that is the loudest or the one that results in the most power. I refuse to play this game. And I am, you know, an ambassador for the kingdom of Jesus Christ, and you know, his values are my values, regardless of where they fall on either, you know, side of any conversation that we have going on right now. I refuse to act out of fear or anger or anxiety. You know, I am going to respond with wisdom. I'm going to respond with faith, you know. And I think that it's something that's really hard to do. I think it's something we don't know how to do. But yeah. I'm curious, what else do you see as like the relationship between the gospel and anxiety? How does the gospel address anxiety, especially corporate anxiety?
Yeah, I think what you just said, you said really well. And I think, you know, a Christian is not a person who tries to put a lid and deny anxiety and press down and say, and, you know, go la, 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 it's not there. I mean, that is not what the gospel presents us with, right? Is ignoring on a holistic level what we're facing and feeling. All those things are real. We have an entire book called the Psalms that is people singing out their anxieties. You know, yeah. David is singing his anxiety. But I think the idea of presence is so important. And I think, you know, getting back to even spiritual disciplines and saying, Lord, I am an anxious person living in an anxious world, but I'm also representing a kingdom that is being built by Jesus, who is the epitome of anti-anxiety, mm-hmm. you know, because our worldview would tell us that there is not one stray molecule in the universe, right? The Lord has everything under his control. And I don't think that there's a magic formula. I think that there is. I think that we have been given biblical precedent when we look in scripture that says, and you see all these women, you see all these men that are fighting all of the anxiety of their times and their culture. And the ones that found some sense of center and balance. And again, that's why David in the Psalms, I think, is so important, is he acknowledges what's out there. He acknowledges what's stirring in his heart, but he also acknowledges what's greater in his heart than even the stirring, which is God, and just his absolute love, patience, and the steadfastness of his love, which I think is the answer for the anxiety that, again, the world can't embrace that because they don't have a heart to embrace that. But I think we can offer that in ways that will surprise and shock and utterly just almost unseat them in a sense, right? I do think we have that. We have the power of the Spirit, which is all of those fruits that just, I think, cut a knife through anxiety, even when we're feeling anxious, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I feel like the reality is when we're feeling anxious and recognizing all of the anxiety-producing realities in our world, yeah. that is actually necessary for hope, if you really think about it, because hope requires you to want something other than, you know, and to be looking forward and looking to something. And so if you don't really have a strong sense of hope and a strong sense of, you know, looking for the redemption that we need to come, if you don't actually recognize what is deeply and horribly broken. Yeah. And I think that sometimes the church does kind of have a tendency to, you know, stick their fingers in their ears and say, la, 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 it's all good. You know, Jesus has got us. And, you know, Jesus wept. Jesus recognized like the hard things that were happening in the world. And, you know, but again, he wasn't, like you said, I love that. Like, he was the epitome of a non-anxious presence in the midst of it. He refused to be pushed or pulled into anything that he, you know, wasn't of his kingdom and wasn't of his will and his plan. And so, yeah, we have to come to the point where we're okay with surrendering that and surrendering to his plan, you know. And that's, I mean, I'm talking to myself here. It's not like I'm like, get your act together. Yeah. That's incredibly difficult to do.
Yeah, we're just holding up mirrors right now.
Yeah, right. So we've been talking a little bit about personal, a little bit about corporate anxiety as we've been, you know, kind of chatting through but with regard to ministry specifically, how do we tweak existing ministries to address this onslaught of anxiety? And I know some of those tweaks have already been attempted in the last 3 years. What have you seen happen? What do you feel like has gone well? Where do we still need work? What are your thoughts on what needs to be done to better minister, to better pastor in the midst of this world that we find ourselves?
Yeah, gosh. I think one of the things that I've noticed, and I think this is maybe one of the things that COVID really surfaced, is that people are so fragile. Mm-hmm. And most of the time when we are connecting with people, we just have such a small portion of their story. And ministry can have the tendency to want to be like a fix-it organization. You know, and if we just, here's the book, read the book, you know, here's the three things you should do before you go to bed and when you wake up. And if you would just, you know, if you just stop doing this, everything will be great. And I think that's informed a lot of the ministry culture that you see, you know, I think happening at churches where they don't want to, I think this idea of presence has been lost a little bit, and maybe COVID is helping us back, where it really is about sitting with people, spending time with people, listening to their stories, trying to get an understanding of their anxiety. Actually, what is your anxiety? What are the fears that you're experiencing? And instead of just dropping something quick that makes you feel good about you doing your job, I think instead of trying to always find, I think answers that, you know, at the end of the day, could be largely ineffective. I think just being with people and having people gain a particular kind of understanding about their pastors and their ministry leaders, that these are people that care about me. They care about my life. They care about the things that I'm going through. They're not just trying to wring me out so that all these things aren't bothering me anymore, so that I won't bother them anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think if we just, again, look at the life of Jesus and see the way in which he listened and he spent time and he wasn't hurried, he wasn't trying to get everybody from A to B as quickly as possible, I think we can just learn so much from that. But that's the investment of a pastor that maybe has been lost in some pastoral job descriptions these days. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
That's really interesting. The word investment is interesting, because I think sometimes I think it has become so much of a, I don't know, maybe like, all I can think of is fast food, but I'm actually trying to think of the clothing version of it. But, you know, like, trying to get through things quickly, like you're saying, they're ringing you out so that everybody's okay. And, you know, moving you along in the line of holiness and righteousness. And really, it's this element of investment that perhaps has been lost in a lot of church cultures. And that really needs to be rediscovered, and that this is a long, organic process that, you know, is going to go through good seasons and bad seasons. And, you know, yeah, I really like investment. What, speaking of that, what other language do you think, is there any language that we should adjust? Things in the church, you know, that now we should or we shouldn't say? What are helpful things with regard to anxiety and fear and those kinds of things that need to be said or that need to stop being said?
Well, you know, gosh, and you might have to delete the whole section. we'll just jump right in. But I think even, you know, so I'm ministering in, I'm a Southern California transplant into mid Ohio. Okay. So, different, little bit of a different culture that I'm ministering in. And, I think a lot of fear over faith language, mm-hmm. I think it really presented something, to the church that on one hand is is true on one level, but it doesn't tell the whole story. And I think what's really unhelpful, and it goes back a little bit to what you just said and what we've been talking about, is it's really unhelpful to think that God's view of sanctification is somehow doing things as fast and as famous as possible, and removing people's experiences, removing people's level of trauma they've experienced, removing the stories that have either been built into their lives because of their own mistakes or because of the harm that has been done against them through the years, and trying to eliminate that by saying, hey, if I just get the coffee mug with the scripture on it and I just, you know, read it 10 times over and over again in the morning as fast as I can, that's somehow going to be the thing that helps alleviate, you know, all of the worries or all of the things that I don't feel like I want to deal with that take time. And I think we are caught up in that culture of fastness and quickness and girl, wash your faceness and let's just do this thing. And that is not the mentality of Jesus. That is not the mentality of a Christian life that grows and develops over time, taking into consideration all of the things that affect my faith on a daily basis and that are hitting against my faith on a daily basis. And so me putting on a t-shirt that just says fear over faith and saying, yeah, you just go do that. Well, that's missing 99% of the story. And that's really, really unhelpful for me in terms of wanting to grow deeper into, you know, the life of Jesus. So I think a lot of this language is about fixing and fast, and you should know better, and you should forget about the past, and you should ignore these things that are hard for you, because we have a Jesus that has conquered everything. And that's true. We do have a Jesus that has conquered everything. But he also is doing something in us that takes time. And I think we've missed that. So,
yeah, I mean, we have a Jesus who has conquered everything. But God, who, you know, Jesus is one of the three persons, he is also the creator of the world and of nature. And one of the key things we see in nature is that growth and all of that takes immense amounts of time, and you barely even see it happening. And it's, you know, it is a long-term investment.
Well, and I think even, you know, when we go to scripture, and I think, you know, you go to Peter, and Peter was always so hurried. And Jesus is always, essentially, in some ways, he's slowing Peter down. And he's just saying, stop, Peter. Like, you got to stop. You got to stop stirring. We get to Luke 10, and we get to the story of Martha and Mary. It's stop, Martha. Like, you're just stirring. You're trying to gain control. You're trying to find quick solutions to long-term answers that I provide. But you have to slow down to gain it. And that is so hard for us. That is so hard for me. Mm-hmm. I'm the Martha. I don't want to just slow down and sit at the feet of Jesus. I'm the Peter. I don't want to sit back during the transfiguration and behold this miraculous thing that's going on. I'm like, hey, I'm going to build me some tents. Let's set up camp here. Let's like look around. Let's like make something of this whole thing so that we don't lose the moment, right? And you have God literally interceding with his voice, basically saying, hey, Pete, you need to just actually listen to Jesus, and you just need to slow down. And man, I am famously bad at that. And we all are.
That's another element of our ministry cultures that perhaps needs to shift, because it's one thing. I mean, it might be a negative habit to be in initially, but when you have a culture and a world and a society that is getting more and more, like we were talking about, the fever pitch of anxiety, then it starts to try to match that with the fixing plan, and it just kind of becomes chasing your tail rather than actually doing anything.
Yeah. That's a good word. Yeah.
So one last thought. How do we treat an anxious world? Like as if we were treating a person with anxiety symptoms, like how do we treat our culture? So this is going a little bit beyond just the church, but saying, okay, we as a gospel people, you know, let's say the Lord is gracious and the Holy Spirit is working deeply in us, and we come with wisdom and we come with faith and we come willing to slow down. What is it that we're actually offering the anxious world, and what is it that we need to be presenting? Does that make sense as a question?
Yeah, I think it does. No, I think it does. I think it's a good question too. I think the answer, you know, is that we do have the peace of Jesus to offer an anxious world. And I think so oftentimes we lack peace. And so, we are people that have been given a peace that passes understanding, and yet we are grappling with the same anxiety that the world is grappling with. And so we are entering into situations, and we are entering into life with people, offering them anxiety for their anxiety. And I think that it's very difficult, but I think, you know, again, we start breaking this down to spiritual disciplines in some ways, right? We start talking about what would it look like for me to, I only have one day at a time, like everybody, if I'm given the day. What does it look like for me to begin a day with the understanding that I'm susceptible to anxiety as much, if not more, than everybody? I also have the Spirit living inside of me that has given me a peculiar and a particular peace that can guard me against delivering an anxious presence to another person. What would it look like for me to begin my day acknowledging my anxiety, but also acknowledging the God who is over my anxiety and who has given me this peculiar peace? And what would that look like for me in the world to be a person of peace that is offering that to those around me that I know are battling, again, the same anxiety, but they may not know Jesus, so then they're not going to know the peace of Jesus. I think when people come into contact with that, I think it looks like nothing else they've ever seen. It's otherworldly, and that's why. It's supernatural. We have that. So we have that, and we access that through prayer. And we access that through being reminded through God's word that he is offering us himself to be that peace. And I think it's just something that has to be so intentional. And for believers to say, hey, I want to be a person that is able to come into a room and be the peace within the anxiety that is permeating this whole place. Mm-hmm. And I think we have that if we have Christ, for sure.
Fascinating. Okay. Well, we are out of time. I would love to continue to engage, but I do want to thank you so much, Ronnie, for joining us and for helping us think through kind of what it means to be in an anxious world and to try to be that peaceful presence and what that might look like. Just thank you so much again.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. I learned a lot from a lot of the things you said today. So thanks so much.
Oh, well, thank you. And we also want to thank those of you who are watching and listening. If you enjoyed today's podcast, please be sure to follow us wherever you listen to podcasts. It really does help us be heard by others. And we just ask that you would join us next time when we discuss issues of God and culture.
Thanks for listening to The Table Podcast. Dallas Theological Seminary. Teach truth, love well.